The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have lots to get to on today's program. Another political earthquake in Europe. We wrote about it at thetrumpet.com just today. I'll get to that here in just a moment. And also, we'll follow up some on the Russian collusion story from yesterday. We got into that somewhat on yesterday's program, if you didn't hear that podcast. Or the live broadcast of that program, you can, of course, get to that at thetrumpet.com website. Also, with ISIS now pretty much crushed in Syria, you have more and more ISIS fighters from Britain returning to the UK. And incredibly, British authorities are welcoming them back with open arms. It's a shocking story, really, that we'll get to here in just a bit. Also, we'll look at, speaking of the UK, we'll look at the UK's pitiful defense budget and the calls for that to be increased. And across the pond, we'll look at the severe crisis in the U.S. Navy. At least that's the way China views it. And then we have a story, too, that it comes from a commentator calling for Japan to rearm. Japan, so he says, needs long-range missiles because of the North Korean threat. Now, you think about that. What does it mean when prominent voices are calling for Japan, and as we covered last week, for Germany to be militarized, to shed that post-war pacifist cloak, and to rearm, and to get aggressive, and to build long-range missile capabilities? We'll look at that, as I say, coming up later on in this segment. In the next segment, we'll talk about a new poll here in the UK showing that a majority of British Christians no longer believe 4 out of the 10 commandments are really that important. 4. And these are not just Brits. These are British Christians who say that 4 of the 10 are unnecessary. Well, when we get into that, I don't think you'll really be that surprised by which 4 they would prefer to leave off the list. As I say, we'll examine that further coming up in the second segment. Well, this Trumpet.com piece, another political earthquake to rock Europe, Czech Republic's new strongman, yet another king rising. It says here, Andrej Babiš's anti-establishment party, the ANO, won the Czech Republic's election October 22nd, so just a few days ago. It pulled in 30% of the vote. His nearest rival brought in 11%. Talks about how this Babiš, he's an older man, unlike some of the other younger leaders that are coming to the fore, but he still is an anti-establishment candidate. He's in line now, as we cover at the Trumpet, to be the next prime minister. He's the nation's, Czechoslovakia's, or the Czech Republic, I guess. He's the second richest man there. And after his resignation earlier this year due to suspected tax fraud, some thought maybe he was on the down and out, and here he comes. The Czech people, they vote for this charismatic man that many see now as a breath of fresh air. Anti-establishment. They just keep popping up all over the place. It says here at the Trumpet today, this is Jozue Mikkels. He says, Babiš's anti-establishment party, ANO, means yes in the Czech language, and also serves as an acronym for the Action of Dissatisfied Citizens. The party was established in 2011. This is just a six-year-old party. 2011. And became the second strongest party in the governing coalition in 2013. Fast forward to 2017, and you have another political earthquake in Europe. The ANO won 30% of the votes, while the party that previously held the majority, the Czech Social Democratic Party, won only 7%. So yet another anti-establishment candidate, yet another political earthquake to rock Europe. And as Mr. Mickels brings out in the piece, we touched on this on Monday's program where we talked about Germany and the Ten Kings. Keep your eye on the Daniel H. Strongman to come out of Germany. But there's Ten Kings as well that give their power over to the beast. And Herbert Armstrong, he wrote back in 1980, I think I quoted from this on Monday's program, where he talked about Poland, how that it would free itself from Soviet domination. That's happened. And join together with Yugoslavia and possibly Czechoslovakia. That's what Mr. Armstrong wrote back in 1980. And that they together would join with Germany and Italy and France. He wrote about, of course, the resurrected Holy Roman Empire that would dominate Europe one last time. And, of course, all of it's based on Daniel 2 and Revelation 17, which we went through on Monday's program. If you didn't hear that program, again, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to Monday's podcast, Germany and the Ten Kings. We go through a fair bit of that prophecy in Revelation 17. Well, speaking of prophecy, yesterday we went through a few verses from Isaiah 59, which perfectly describes our world today, the corruption in particular. Isaiah the prophet, he said in Isaiah 59 verse 3, "For your hands are defiled with blood and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue has muttered perverseness." It says in verse 4, "None calls for justice, nor any pleads for truth. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity." There's no cause for truth or justice anymore. It just all comes down to vanity and lies. Vanity and lies, that's what we trust in. And we conceive mischief, it says. Now, we at the Trumpet, we've written for a number of years. You go back to the crisis from the year 2000 with the election. And I mean, that just seems fairly tame, as controversial as that was 17 years ago. I mean, you look at the political corruption today. But even back then, my father was talking about, look, you're having more and more crises like this politically because we don't love the Constitution. We don't love the law of the land. We don't uphold the law. You'll see this as a reoccurring theme even on today's program. My father said back in 2000, "Does anybody really believe these politicians love the Constitution of this great land more than their man becoming president?" It's a crisis, he said. We better sit up and take note. We better heed the warning. You start undermining the Constitution. You start undermining the supreme law of the land, and everything breaks down. So steeped in sin, that's what the prophet Isaiah describes in Isaiah 59, also in Isaiah 1, which we touched on yesterday as well. David French at National Review, he does a pretty good job, I think, of just summarizing this Russian collusion story, or the Russian dossier story, as he calls it, and how that it highlights this storm of Clinton deception, media irresponsibility, and Democratic moral blindness. He says, remember that infamous Russian dossier, the unverified document that BuzzFeed unceremoniously dumped into the public square earlier this year? You might recall it as making a series of incredibly salacious and completely unproven accusations against the sitting president of the United States. Well, it turns out that it was a piece of partisan opposition research bought and paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee, both of which then denied having anything to do with it after the fact. I mean, for a year, they've been denying it. It was some kind of, I guess, some kind of Democratic super PAC, but we can't control it. We didn't have anything to do with it. And for a year, they've been saying, no, we weren't behind it. And then the Washington Post reveals on Tuesday night, sure enough, that they were behind it. Further on, French says, let's consider how the Russian dossier story has thus far represented a perfect storm of classic Clintonism, media irresponsibility, and Democratic moral blindness. He says, first, the Clintonism. He cites a tweet sent out by the New York Times' Maggie Haberman. She's written some on this dossier and other things about Russian collusion, what they've been searching for in the Trump administration. And she tweeted out Tuesday night after this Washington Post revelation that people from the Clinton camp have been lying with sanctimony for over a year. And French says here, the lies here are important. It's one thing to review a dossier compiled by a former intelligence agent and consider its contents as the product of an objective process. It's another thing entirely to review the same work as the direct product of an opposing campaign's opposition research. The goal of an opposition researcher is to collect everything and share everything with the client. A proper intelligence analysis, however, involves separating truth from fiction and provable claims from unverifiable allegations. Those who pitched the Russian dossier treated it not as opposition research, but rather as a form of intelligence, an intelligence report. It had distinctive formatting. It used terms of art. It looked like a government document. How many people did it fool? I mean, it was just an oppo research. And BuzzFeed went with it, and the major media hopped on board. And they've been trying to prove collusion ever since. Collusion between Russia and Donald Trump, that is. Certainly not the Clinton camp. Well, he talks about media irresponsibility here as well, David French. He says there are reasons why news outlets don't simply publish partisan opposition research files. They're full of rumor, innuendo, and sometimes outright lies. Imagine, though, I mean, just even leaving aside these revelations, the fact that as I think as much as $9 million was spent to gather this information, so much of it based on innuendo, rumor, lies. And yet that's just routine. That's what you're supposed to do. If you're on one side or the other, I mean, you have to collect research. You have to dig up dirt on your opponent. I've been reading Cheryl, I forget her name all of a sudden, her book Smear, Cheryl Atkinson, who herself, she was smeared. Fascinating book, and also kind of frightening to think about the millions and millions of dollars, in some cases hundreds of millions, that are behind smear campaigns to destroy people. A lot of these cases, of course, it's a mixture of truth and error. But you know that there's going to be some attacks coming on God's people before the return of Christ. And you're seeing some of the tactics now that are going to be used against God's work. Innuendo, rumor, gossip, lies. French says here, yes, there are often true allegations alongside the scurrilous ones, but responsible journalists research these allegations before publishing them. Responsible journalists know to treat dirt from opposing campaigns with special skepticism. They don't simply take a campaign work, upload it to their servers, and press publish. And yet, that's exactly what BuzzFeed did when it published the dossier in January. That's exactly what BuzzFeed did. And as I say, others in the media, they ran with it too. I mean, you heard it yourself, the kind of coverage that there was in February, March, April. I mean, people were out there accusing the Trump administration of treason because they said Trump was trying to dig up dirt on Hillary Clinton from the Russians. Pretty amazing. That's exactly what BuzzFeed did. It says, we knew then that it was the product of Trump opponents. After all, which Trump friend would commission such a report? We did not know it was the product of the Clinton campaign. A news outlet took a rumor-filled document and then unknown origin, failed to verify its claims, and published it anyway. See, it's like Cheryl Atkinson says in her book. I mean, that just happens all the time. And particularly just in the last generation. You look at the mudslinging going back into the 1990s, here again with the Clinton family and their opponents, and vice versa. And then carrying on through to the big controversy in 2000, the back and forth. And then the Swift boat veterans, remember that controversy? And the back and forth there, mudslinging galore. It's just now the way the game is played. It's constant. It's nonstop. A news outlet took the rumor-filled document of then unknown origin, failed to verify its claims, and published it anyway. At the time, BuzzFeed called its work ferocious reporting. French says, but anyone can publish an opposition research file. It was shameful for BuzzFeed to publish the dossier then. It's even more shameful now. Now you know the background. Well, here again, like my father has said in years past, if you don't have a supreme law that has final say, there's not going to be any rule. There won't be any final authority. There won't be justice. None plead for justice or for the truth. Everything's relative. The ends justify the means, always, certainly in politics. Proverbs 14:12 says, there's a way which seems right to a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Where is this leading? Every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. It's leading to a total breakdown. Socially, it's leading to a total breakdown of our nations. It's leaving us very vulnerable to an outside attack. Sickness from within, as I covered yesterday, sickness from head to toe, both sides, top to bottom. You see it here in Britain, as I said. I mentioned that story about ISIS on the run now, out of Syria, out of Iraq. And this piece here at the Telegraph, this is from last week. It says, many Britons who have returned from Islamic State territory are not being prosecuted and instead need to be reintegrated because they were simply naive, the government's terrorism laws watchdog has said. This is the government in the UK. This is the terrorism laws watchdog. He's saying it is true. We've got fighters that were fighting for ISIS returning to the UK. And we need to do everything we can, not to prosecute them. We need to reintegrate them into British society. It says here, hundreds of Britons who went to Syria or Iraq in the past few years are already thought to have returned, but the authorities have decided not to charge all of them. That's according to Max Hill, this chief. He spoke after Andrew Parker, the director general of MI5, said the country faced an intense threat from Islamist terrorism, with plots now being hatched at a tempo he had never seen before. I mean, the threats are everywhere. The threat rating, sky high. And yet those in the power position say, hang on a second, don't get riled up. We need to welcome them back in. They need to be reintegrated. The article says that something like 850 Britons are thought to have traveled to Syria since 2011. 850 doing who knows what? Chopping heads off, raping Yazidi women, But now they're back. And they might have just gotten caught up into the emotion of it all. We've got to work them back into British society. Is there a sickness in our nations? National Review, Michael Brendan Doherty, he wrote on this revelation from last week. He writes, "Ah, the folly of youth. Some drive too fast in their parents' cars, some fall in love with the wrong person, and some leave their hometown to fly the black flag of ISIS in Syria, perhaps beheading a few apostates or raping and enslaving some Yazidis. Young people are so idealistic and headstrong, aren't they?" It says further, "So conclude British authorities, as more ISIS fighters return to the UK after the caliphate was routed in Raqqa. No need to prosecute all of them or even prevent them from entering the country. They were just kids being kids. The theory is that these ISIS boys were just going to Syria to kill and die out of a sense of naivete, possibly with some brainwashing along the way. So you've got to give them a pass. They were young and stupid. We forgive them. They can come back in." It says here, "ISIS was a genocidal outfit. Many of its fighters participated in and witnessed unimaginable horrors." He says, "Seven decades later, Germany still prosecutes guards who participated in the Holocaust when they confined them. What kind of justice do the victims of ISIS deserve? I mean, where is the call for justice? Where are those who are guilty of these crimes? They're roaming the streets in Britain. And the British authorities say that's fine. That's fine. They were brainwashed. So help them get readjusted." Doherty says here, finally, "There really is something in the liberal democratic mind that finds it impossible to believe that ISIS fighters are fully conscious of their motives and desires and that they are really guilty. Instead, they're said to be merely naive. They need not repent. They just need a goodwill gesture of reintegration on our part, so our leaders think." It's frightening. I mean, so there's a sickness and also just a weakness and a vulnerability. God says in Leviticus 26, I'll break the pride of your power. God is breaking the pride of Britain's power, of America's power. Something's terribly wrong with us. I mean, this doesn't even make sense from a national security standpoint. But this is the way the liberal mind works. The liberal democratic mind. We've got to really reach out to those killers, and then they'll turn it around, and then they'll love us. What a danger this poses. Already there have been talks of other attacks elsewhere since they're on the run in Syria and Iraq, and I mean, there have been attacks in Europe, multiple attacks. There have been attacks in Britain, several this year. And yet the chief, the one that has some power to do something about it, he's the government's terrorism laws watchdog. And he says, you know, we can't prosecute. We've got to help them work their way back into British society. Well, again, speaking of Britain and its weakness and the broken power or pride in the power. There was another one sounding the alarm, another former military chief sounding the alarm, saying we better shore up our defenses. We better increase the budget, or we're going to leave ourselves wide open to an attack. It says here, this is from today, Britain's defense budget must be increased to ensure the UK's armed forces can protect the homeland against potential attacks from China or Russia. This is according to a former military chief, Sir Richard Barons. He's saying we've got to up the budget, and we can't we can't reduce the size of the army any further below 82,000. That's where it's at, 82,000. Just a tiny little army as it is. And it keeps shrinking. Well, as for the lone superpower, America, this piece from Real Clear Defense, is the U.S. Navy weak? We've talked before about these collisions, these two high-profile collisions that have happened, I think one in June and the other in August. The Tokyo Harbor collision, seven U.S. sailors were killed in this navigation collision. And then following that, you had the USS John McCain in August, another collision, 10 sailors killed. It became clear after these two events that the U.S. Navy had entered into a period of rather severe crisis. This is Real Clear Defense from just today. And this article quotes from Chinese publications, Chinese military commentators, who are saying there's a severe crisis in the U.S. Navy. It says here, two articles in the Chinese military newspaper China National Defense reveal the rather disturbing conclusion that they view the U.S. Navy as comprised of, quote, men that are weary, with their steeds spent, helmets askew, and armor bent. I mean, that's the way China sees it. That's the way China views it, these China military publications. It says here, the second analysis is also suggests that basic personnel training has been neglected, leading to an overall decline in proficiency of the force. I mean, that's according to an editorial at this magazine, China National Defense, from September 1st. It says the U.S. Navy finds itself getting into accidents lately against the background of commonly entering other countries' nearby seas and sensitive waters to undertake so-called patrols with ships in bad condition. Personnel, physically and spiritually exhausted and with lax safety knowledge. I mean, they're not well trained. They're short-handed. They're understaffed. They're tired. They're weary. This is the U.S. and Britain. Even as I said at the top, you have all of these calls in Europe and elsewhere. Germany needs to rearm. Japan needs to rearm. They need to be remilitarized. There's threats. I mean, there's threats from Russia. There's threats from North Korea. This is where we are today. Brad McDonald, he sent out a trumpet brief just yesterday about the illusion of peace, the peace illusion, as he called it, and this false sense of security. He mentioned prophecies that we've referred to before on this show. Jeremiah 8, the prophet saying, when they say peace, peace, you better know there's no peace. When they look for peace, but no good comes, you'll at least know that I told you this. Paul said in 1 Thessalonians 5 that when they say peace and safety, sudden destruction is coming. As Mr. McDonald brought out in his brief, beware of the peace illusion. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. When we come back, we'll get into that new study just revealed here in the UK about four out of the Ten Commandments no longer seen as necessary. This according to British Christians. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
I mentioned the latest Trumpet brief about the illusion of peace, or the peace illusion, as Brad McDonald called it, in his email letter that went out last night. He talked there at the end of his message about the way to peace. Then he referenced Psalm 119 and verse 165, a memory verse, which says, "Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them." You can have peace. You can know the way to peace. You have to love the law of God, though. The way of peace is defined biblically as the law of God. That's what Herbert Armstrong said back in 1971. God's law is the way to peace. That's the thing. And for 6,000 years, man has been rejecting God's laws. He's been rejecting the commandments of God. And so it's a simple matter of cause and effect. We don't love the law of God, and so we have lots of trouble. We have lots of war and rumors of war. As I covered with you on the program the other day, listen to what Herbert Armstrong had to say about God's law, quoting from another verse in Psalm 119. This is clip one.
Now, what is righteousness? Psalms 119, verse 172 says, "All thy commandments are righteousness." All the commandments of God, and that's all 10 of them, not 9 of them, not 6 of them, not 1 of them, but all 10 are righteousness. And as James says in the second chapter, let me repeat, if you break one, you're guilty of all.
All 10 of them are righteousness. All 10, not 6, not 9. All 10. Mr. Armstrong wrote in Mystery of the Ages, he asked, "Can you realize that every unhappiness, every evil that has come to humanity has been the result of transgressing God's law? Can you realize this? Can you grasp this fact? That all of the suffering, all of the unhappiness we see in the world today, the misery and the death, every particle of it, it comes solely from breaking the commandments, transgressing God's laws." This Telegraph piece about the latest YouGov poll here in the UK, it says here, "The Ten Commandments are a central tenet of the Christian faith, but research has revealed that just 6 of them are still important to British Christians." These are British Christians. These are so-called Christians here in the land of Britain. And they say only 6 are even necessary. We can do without 4 of them at least. The article says most Christians believe that 4 of the commandments are not important principles to live by, according to a YouGov poll. The four, and you see if you can guess the four, as I said at the start of the show, you're probably not going to be surprised by which four are left out. The four which have fallen by the wayside are the requirement not to worship idols or use the Lord's name in vain, to worship no other god, and to keep the Sabbath day holy. The first four commandments, in other words. The last six, well, okay, we can see where those are still helpful. The first four, not so much. So say British Christians. Now, in the New Testament, this is in Matthew 22, Jesus was asked by an individual, what's the greatest commandment? What's the great commandment in the law? And Christ's response to that question was that you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. I mean, Christ answered without hesitation. He said to love God with your whole heart, soul, and mind. That's the first commandment. That's the great commandment. That's the most important one. And then he went on to say that the second great command is likened to it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets, Christ said. So God's law of love, God is love. We learn that from the Bible. His law is love. And that law of love is subdivided into these two great commands. Love toward God first. And love toward neighbor or fellow man. And then if you take it a step further, these two great laws, these two great sections of the law of love, they're subdivided further into 10 commandments. These 10 commands we've been studying, as I said yesterday, in our doctrines class here at the college. And the thing about these 10, the first four of the 10 commandments, these are oriented toward loving God. They teach us how to love God first. That's the first and great command, as Jesus said. And the last six of the 10 commandments are aimed at showing us how to love fellow man, our neighbor. And so, according to this latest poll, I mean, British Christians believe that the first four are not really necessary. It says less than one in three, not even a third, of Christians believe in preserving Sunday as a day of rest. Well, as we know, they have the wrong day as it is, but even that, it's just a shallow observance, if even that, if you could even call it an observance. No real change in behavior on Sunday. Not necessary. Sabbath command, no longer needed. It says only 38% believe that there's still validity to not taking the Lord's name in vain. 43% condemning the worship of idols. It says, but most Christians, it goes on, but most Christians in common with the general public still believe that it's wrong to disobey your father and mother, commit adultery, covet others' possessions, bear false witness, steal, and commit murder. It says stealing and killing were the most widely condemned transgressions, with 94% of Christians and 93% of non-religious people believing those commandments are still important and relevant. So pretty much unanimous agreement for Christians and non-Christians alike that at least we can agree on the fact that stealing and killing is wrong. And then toward the end of the article, you get someone who comments on this study and who sees some positives. This is a theologian. The Bishop of Manchester, he says the survey shows that the practical morality, which has lain at the heart of the Judeo-Christian tradition for the last 3,500 years, still finds favor with most British people today, even where explicitly religious commandments gain less support. Believers and non-believers alike support the simple ancient statements which continue to provide the foundations of our legal system and our shared sense of right and wrong. He says Britain today may be a more culturally and religiously diverse country than ever before, but across that diversity, these pillars of wisdom are holding firm. So he sees it, I guess, he sees it as a good sign, this study. 4 out of 10 aren't necessary, but hey, the fact that Christians and non-Christians alike can agree on thou shalt not murder, that's an encouraging sign. Meanwhile, the love for God, putting God above all else, loving him with your whole heart and soul and mind, not really necessary in our modern world today. One of the points that we've made here in Doctrines as we've studied these Ten Commandments is how that all of the commandments that follow the first and great commandment, they flow out from obedience to that first and great commandment, that we're to love God above all else with our whole heart and soul and mind, the way that it's expressed in the Ten Commandments chapter, Exodus 20. God says, you shall have no other gods before me. No one else comes in front of me. And even before that, God reminded the Israelites, look, I brought you out of Egypt. I brought you out of the house of bondage. I've set you free from captivity. Now, you don't put any other God before me. God is a jealous God. If you put another God in place of him, well, forget about what it says in James 2. Well, Mr. Armstrong mentioned it. You break one, you're guilty of them all. But what does it say if you just say to God, I don't need the first commandment. I don't need number 2. I don't need number 3. I don't need number 4. Now, from 5 to 10, maybe there's some wisdom there because it kind of fits in more with some of the national laws you see in our nations. How far have we drifted from God's law? And does it have anything to do with the way to peace? And the fact that we can't find our way there? I'll leave it to you to study through Exodus 20. Verse 12 is the fifth commandment, honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord God gives you. So here's the first 4 commandments that sum up our overall approach to life, putting God first in everything, upholding and esteeming God's position, God's authority, God's supremacy, God's high office above all else, and reverencing him, honoring him. And then we come to the fifth commandment, that like the Ten Commandments booklet brings out, our free booklet, it's like a bridge commandment. And these 2 great commands, love toward God, love toward fellow man, you have the fifth commandment following those 4 commands that teach you how to love God. And then the fifth commandment requires all of us to honor the highest human office, that of the father and the mother. I mean, that's where godly authority begins for a little infant, for a little toddler. Our booklet, the Ten Commandments, it says, this commandment then forms the bridge between the 2 great sections of God's law. We will never attain true spiritual and physical success without giving honor and obedience to God. Do we see that the same is true of our human parents? See, a little toddler, a little infant, he's learning from a God-fearing, I mean, this is in the, you know, when it's in the ideal, when you have a righteous family. And here is a youngster learning from a righteous father how to obey and honor the father of the household. And what did God mean for that to lead to when he set up and established the family institution to begin with? It's all about teaching us how to honor God the Father, our Heavenly Father, to honor and reverence our Creator, the great Creator God. You take away the first and great commandment, you have nothing left to stand on. Nothing. That's where we are, though, in the world of the Christian, the traditional Christian world today. Let's look over at Matthew 23. Jesus here encountered these self-righteous Pharisees who love to talk about the law of God, but they didn't obey it. They didn't observe these commandments of God. And so Jesus said to his disciples, you know, look at what they say and take heed to what they have to say, but don't look at what they do because they don't practice it. They're hypocrites. They're just Christians in name only. They're Christians in outward appearance only. They don't have a deep personal relationship with God. They don't honor and revere God. And well, he says in Matthew 23, woe unto you. This is his rebuke for those Pharisees. Woe unto you, blind guides. Blind fools, it says later, blind men. Down in verse 23, this is Matthew 23 and verse 23. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, faith. These ought you to have done and not to leave the other undone. I mean, the small ones, the middle-sized ones, the big ones, all of it. You can't leave anything out. You're guilty of one and you're guilty of them all, like Mr. Armstrong said, paraphrasing James 2. I want to read to you what Joseph Tkach had to say back in 1992. Some of you familiar with this history, you know what happened after the death of Mr. Armstrong. And these successors came along, and as Malachi 2 says, they stumbled at the law. That's where their real problem was. That's why they destroyed the work that God did through Mr. Armstrong. That's why they wanted to get rid of all of his teachings. Because they had a real problem with God's law. And you see that reflected in this statement from 1992. This is Joe DeKoch writing, these moral problems, along with the more invisible moral problems of neglect and oppression of the weak and the poor, and corruption in business, politics, and religion, would indeed be improved if people began keeping the Ten Commandments. However, it's a common mistake to assume if everybody would just keep the Ten Commandments, what a nice world we would have. He says, Christians should consider that the Ten Commandments do not require kindness, mercy, compassion, generosity, sacrifice for others, impartiality, patience, or love. He said that the Ten Commandments do not require that. Nor do the Ten Commandments specifically forbid conceit, envy, hatred, rage, or selfish ambition. So, you know where he's getting at. They don't really solve the problems, and so they're not necessary. I mean, he was ahead of this YouGov poll from 2017. This is him in 1992, following the death of Herbert Armstrong just 6 years earlier. And he's basically throwing the law out the window, saying that the Ten Commandments are nice, they're okay, but, you know, they're not really that good. What God instituted, the laws of God, his way of life, that was codified then as those 10 great commands, they're really not all that effective. Going back to what Mr. Armstrong asked, can you realize that every unhappiness, every evil that has come to humanity has been the result of transgressing God's law? And then he made this classic statement, if no one ever had any other God before the true God, if all children were reared to honor, respect, and obey their parents, I read part of this yesterday, and all parents reared their children in God's ways, if no one ever allowed the spirit of murder to enter his heart, if there were no wars nor killing of humans by humans, if all marriages were kept happy, and there were no transgressions of chastity before or after marriage, if all had so much concern for the good and welfare of others, no one would steal, and we could throw away all locks, keys, and safes, if everyone told the truth, everyone's word was good, everyone were honest, if no one ever coveted what was not rightfully his, but had so much outgoing concern for the welfare of others that he believed it is more blessed to give than to receive, what a happy world we would have. What a happy world it would be if people kept the Ten Commandments. What a difference in the thinking of these two leaders of the same church. But Mr. Armstrong dies in 1986, and then a few years later, you have Mr. Decotts saying, you know, the Ten Commandments are okay, but they're not really the solution to the problems of this world. We ran across a video this morning, Dennis Prager. I mean, this is some pretty sound instruction on the Ten Commandments, very similar, in fact, to what I just read to you from Mystery of the Ages, a 1986 quote from Herbert Armstrong. And notice what Dennis Prager had to say about the Ten Commandments, clip two.
No document in world history so changed the world for the better as did the Ten Commandments. Western civilization, the civilization that developed universal human rights, created women's equality, ended slavery, created parliamentary democracy, among other unique achievements, would not have developed without them. As you will see when each of the Ten Commandments is explained, these commandments are as relevant today as when they were given over 3,000 years ago. In fact, they're so relevant that the Ten Commandments are all that is necessary to make a good world, a world free of tyranny and cruelty. Imagine for a moment a world in which there was no murder or theft. In such a world, there would be no need for armies or police or weapons. Men and women and children could walk anywhere at any time of day or night without any fear of being killed or robbed. Imagine further a world in which no one coveted what belonged to their neighbor, a world in which children honored their mother and father and the family unit thrived. A world in which people obeyed the injunction not to lie. The recipe for a good world is all there in these 10 sublime commandments.
Well, that world is coming soon. We're not going to have to imagine it for much longer. Good for Dennis Prager for paraphrasing basically from 308 of Mystery of the Ages. I don't know if he's read from that book or not, but he's right. I mean, Western civilization wouldn't have developed without them, without this document, without these Ten Commandments. I mean, all that is necessary for a happy, fruitful, peaceful society is found in those commands. It's like Brad McDonald said in the trumpet brief, quoting from that psalm, Psalm 119 and verse 165. I mean, peace. You'll find peace if you love the law of God. Great peace have they, which love God's law. It's sad, though, when you hear more common sense from Dennis Prager in that recent video than you do from those who followed or who said they were to follow in the steps of Herbert Armstrong. And then they immediately cast God's truth, God's laws to the ground, as it says in the book of Daniel. You read and study about God's law and everything God has to say about it, like in Romans 7. It's beautiful, it's holy, it's just, it's good. That's the solution to all these problems we see today. And yet Satan, because he's the god of this world, he hates God's law. He does everything he can to undermine it, to do away with it. Before we conclude here, let me just play one last clip. This is going back to Mr. Armstrong's program from the 1960s. Many deceivers preach in Christ's name. Here's what he had to say, clip three.
You see, they're preaching a different Jesus today. Because Jesus, when the young man came to him and said, "What shall I do that I may inherit eternal life?" He didn't say, "Why, there's nothing for you to do. I'm going to do it all for you." He didn't say that. What he did say is, "If thou would enter into life, keep the commandments." And the young man said, "Which?" And he named some of the ten to show him that he meant the law of God. Now, if you keep one or two of the Ten Commandments and you don't keep them all, if you turn back into the second chapter of James, you will see that if you break one of the points, you are guilty of all. If you break one and keep the other nine, you are guilty of transgressing the law. That's in the second chapter of James.
Lots of chapters that you can study. Just that we've touched on today, that one in Matthew 23. Of course, earlier on in Matthew, where Jesus magnified the law. Mr. Armstrong mentioned James, too, a couple of times. The young man that asked him, what commandments are you talking about? That's in Matthew 19. If you'd really like to dig in and study, we have a free booklet for you on these very commands. The Ten Commandments. It's not six. It's not four. It's not eight or nine. It's the ten. It's the Ten Commandments of God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.